Heretic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The essence of betrayal is that we rob somebody of the story of their lives. Esther Perel. Welcome to Grimly. What's that shirt?
It says fuck Donald Trump.
Oh, nice, 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 nice.
8647.
Fuck Donald Trump. Like that. Two Chainz? No, not Two Chainz.
I don't know who that is.
No, it's not Two Chainz. Who sings that?
I have no idea.
Hold on.
Which I'm kind of surprised I don't know.
That song? Or you don't know who sings it?
I don't know who sings it.
But you know the song?
I do know the song. Yeah, like every protest I've gone to, they've played it.
YG and Nipsey.
Okay, definitely
that
not Two Chainz.
Sound right.
Play it for 7 seconds or okay. Less.
For 7 seconds. Yeah, that's the one.
That's the one. Yeah.
Oh no.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. I missed you. We haven't done this in so long.
I know. It's been like a month.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute.
Welcome to Grimly.
Welcome to Grimly. We are two unserious people that talk about serious or creepy shit. And I am Missy.
And I'm Meg.
And we are back in the New York groove, baby.
I love that. I'm going to try not to sing again on this episode.
Did you sing in the last episode?
No, I just usually do. And I already said
I do too.
The funk Donald Trump song already.
Totally.
Do you have a segue? Because I do have a story I've been waiting to tell you.
Okay. I do have a quick
announcement. You have some business?
Kind of business. So I went on my road trip and I hung out with my friends, Kim and Daryl, who are friends of the pod. They listen. And they pointed out to me, they asked me, they're like, do you pick the ads that roll at the beginning of your episodes? And I was like, no.
No.
And they're like, well, they're like, there was one the other day that was like a Jesus.
Oh, no.
Type of ad. And I was like, really? So just a quick announcement. We don't fucking know. And hail Satan.
Oh, God.
Because
you know, whatever floats your boat, of course.
Yeah, totally.
I don't subscribe.
I do not subscribe.
He can rest in peace.
R.I.P. Jesus.
That's okay, though, yeah. I guess. Weird. That would
it
be
was
jarring.
Weird.
It would be jarring.
Yeah.
When I listen to the pod, I just skip through the ads like a normal person.
Totally. I mean, I do, too. It's okay.
I probably shouldn't say that.
I mean, they're there. You can do what you want with them.
Mm-hmm.
You have the power.
Yes.
And your little
I guess
15s.
Unless if your hands are full and you're sort of stuck.
Yeah.
That does happen occasionally.
That does happen. And that's unfortunate. But you know what? You will get through it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jesus saves. Sorry. Anyways, what's your story?
Okay, well, so I guess I should preface because when we started this podcast 2.5 years ago, almost,
yeah.
I was like very much married.
Yeah.
I'm no longer very much married.
Okay. Christ, yes.
As you know.
I do know. I've known for a while.
You know.
Could you imagine if I just show up to a different housing situation and just never
yes,
ask a question?
Yes, I live somewhere else now and all that.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah.
I was about to tell you this story, which was my actual worst nightmare.
Okay.
Of a meet cute moment that I had now as a single woman. I was at the grocery store this morning shopping for our groceries.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a cute guy in the grocery store. He smiled at me. I smiled back. And then I'm just on about my business, right? Mm-hmm. And then he ends up directly behind me in the line to check out.
Oh.
And that's all well and good. But I've got one headphone in and I'm like listening to, and I'm just sort of minding my business. Now I'm actively checking out. So she's scanning my stuff. Mm-hmm. She's like asking for my ID and he starts asking me questions and trying to chat me up while I'm in the middle of this exchange. So there's
like overwhelmed.
I'm overwhelmed. And the worst thing possible happens is he's like, what are you listening to? And girl, I was listening to Justin Bieber.
Were you listening to old Justin Bieber?
No, I was listening to Yukon, which is like really the only song that I play, but I like listen to it on.
Okay.
And he was like, oh, because you're like, I had to say that. And I didn't think quickly on the spot. And so I was like, oh, Justin Bieber. So now he's like, oh, I didn't expect that. You look like you're really grooving. I was like, and then the girl's laughing.
I had a laugh too, now honestly.
I am defending myself.
You're Justin defending Bieber, your musical choice.
And I'm
choice.
Looking at her, I'm like, you know Yukon, right? And she's like, yes. I was like, okay, anyway. And now there's just a whole audience. And instead of being cool and like waiting after I checked out for him to give me my phone number, I just couldn't come back from it. And then I went to my car. And then like we made contact in the parking lot. And then I just got my car and left. And I was like, ugh, I fucked it up.
I would argue that he fucked it up.
He put me on the spot.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Ugh. He could have walked up and, whoa, that was really funny, or just made a joke about it.
I know.
In the parking
anyway,
lot.
Anyway, it could have been cute.
It could have been cute.
It will just be a fun memory now, yeah. An embarrassing memory.
Yeah, on my end of that spectrum, I was matched with a guy on Hinge. I texted you this last night. He listened to the most recent episode and then unmatched with me.
How do you know he listened to it?
He told me.
Oh, did he tell you why he was unmatching?
Or no, he just unmatched.
Oh, God.
His like last message was like, oh, you have a very, some sort of descriptive word for my voice that was nice.
Oh, that's nice.
And then he just unmatched. Oh. So anyway, it's fuck you, Andy. Oh,
no, Andy. I sort of doubt he's going to listen.
Probably not.
But I hope so. That
I was a little offended. Kind of funny. I'm so not gonna sorry. Lie.
I've told you to be careful about this. I've told you know how I feel about this. It is a lot.
I know you feel about this. I don't care. This is listen, very much my personality.
I know. And I guess if what you're trying to do is scare them away, you're doing a really good job. Keep it up, sister.
Should we have a dating podcast after this? What not to do with Missy and Meg.
Oh my God. It's just a lot. I think
failures in dating
without knowing us with knowing us, but especially without knowing us, there could be a perception that we are some hateful misandrous bitches, you know, which isn't totally untrue, but there is some nuance.
I would just argue that men need to stop sucking as much.
Yeah.
There's some good ones out there. There we have friends. So there are good ones. We enjoy them.
Yeah, my current husband is a good one. He's lovely.
Yeah, lovely man. We love Dave.
We do.
What was the other? Oh, did you see the thing about the Murdoch trial?
Yes, he was acquitted.
The conviction was reversed.
Okay, so they're gonna have to do a new trial.
I think they're gonna have to do a new trial.
Yeah, I didn't look into it very closely.
It's something to do with the clerk. The clerk said some shit to the jury that maybe swayed the jury, is what they're arguing.
Oh,
basically, it was like, don't believe the defense's witnesses or something, but.
Wow, the clerk ought to know better, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like you should know better than that.
I might just be making that up. Okay. I am confidently incorrect often, take my word on that. But I think there was something, someone said something, got to the jury. It was enough that they was able to get a reverse conviction and a retrial, unfortunately.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
I mean, of course he's getting a retrial. If you've listened to the last podcast on the left's coverage of that case in the Murdoch family, you know that they
are and the
deep,
power.
Their talons are deep in that county. Yeah. So it kind of makes sense.
I know. Unfortunately, when I heard that, I was like, damn, I guess they do run deep in that county.
Justice is unfortunately not fair in this country. But yeah, that was it's interesting. I do not have a Segu.
Okay. But sweet. Let's just get started then. What are we talking about today?
Okay.
I actually can't wait because it's just been so long.
I know. This is going to be a true crime corner.
Okay.
It was really going to be a one-parter. It's now a two-parter probably.
Oh, okay.
Just because of how we talk. And I think we're both going to have a lot of opinions about the story. So this is not a story with clean lines. To the surface, it's a very clear story of betrayal and divorce. But it's not just a story about a jealous ex-wife or a cheating husband or a younger woman or a brutal divorce. It's all those things at once, And that's what makes it so unsettling, because long before the murders, everyone involved was already living inside the wreckage. This is the story of Betty Broderick.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there's a lot to... did you watch the HBO show?
The Netflix show? The Dirty John? With Amanda Peet?
I swear there was a... it's a different one.
There's a different one.
Oh, okay.
I think you're thinking... There's another Betty...
Okay.
That Elizabeth Olsen played.
Yes, yes, it's yes. Not okay, that story. That's a different one. Okay.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Okay, I have seen both of them. Yeah. Okay.
So, Betty Broderick was born on November 7th, 1947 in East Chester, New York. And Betty was number 3 of 6 kids.
Middle child.
Mm-hmm. And grew up in a strict Catholic household. Mm.
Do you think people still grow up in strict Catholic households? Or does that seem like less?
I think on maybe the East Coast.
The East Coast. Yeah. Or Latin communities.
Mm. For sure. For sure.
Interesting.
Okay. I mean, both my parents grew up Catholic.
And yeah, my mom was Catholic.
Yeah.
But I'm like, is anybody really Catholic anymore?
I don't know. I mean, I know people who were former Catholics.
Yeah, exactly.
That's about it.
Interesting.
I mean, the Pope is Catholic, so I think there's still a pretty big following there.
I guess so.
Yeah. And he's from Chicago.
Oh.
So maybe in Chicago. That's okay. Where all the Catholics are. So looking back on her early life, Betty says that she was always being set up to be a housewife. She would often be in charge of taking care of her younger siblings and other kids in the neighborhood after coming home from Catholic school, which was an all-girls Catholic school. And that also seemed to be part of her decision to study early childhood education in English at the University of St. Vincent in 1965. So she was on a trajectory to be a housewife, honestly. It kind of reminds me, did you ever watch the movie Mona Lisa Smile?
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of that. These girls went to college just to find husbands.
Yes.
And it feels like that to me, unfortunately.
Yes. God, that's a good movie.
Yeah, it's a sad movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was while she was taking a trip down to Indiana during college to watch the Notre Dame football game, her freshman year of college, is where she would cross paths with Dan Broderick. So Betty was 17, 5'10", blonde.
Damn.
Tall girl. She was blonde and she was beautiful.
Okay.
In fact, she had made some money modeling, so she Dan's eye instantly. Dan was 21 and also attractive and walked up to Betty and asked to borrow her pen and wrote down his name along with MD in parentheses A. So Betty asked what the A was for. Dan says medical doctor, almost.
Oh, okay.
Because he had just been accepted to Cornell for medical school.
I would say almost is a stretch.
If you were just accepted?
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Almost is like you're a junior.
Sir.
Or like you're in year 3 of medical school, maybe.
Okay, but it's a flex, I guess.
It's slick.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of your mute cute this morning.
I know. I wasn't
slick. So Daniel Thomas Broderick III was born on November 22nd, 1944 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, into a large Irish Catholic family, both staunchly Catholic people. He was the eldest of 9 children.
Oh my God.
I know. And he grew up in a traditional conservative upper middle class household where education, religion, and discipline and achievement were heavily emphasized. Mm. He was always it kind of reminds me of the Kennedys.
Okay, yeah.
A little bit.
Sure.
Who are also Catholic.
Yeah.
So Dan's father was a successful businessman, but was also very absent in his upbringing, which I do think reflects on how he would look at his own marriage with Betty eventually.
Okay, 9 children is a lot, so you do need to go to work.
You gotta go to work a lot, probably. Yes. Yeah. But he was very absent. He wasn't present.
Sure, he wasn't an emotionally present.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah. So Dan also goes through Catholic school until he enrolls at Notre Dame, which is the biggest Catholic school in the country.
Oh, I did not know they were Catholic, but that makes sense.
Yeah. So where he then goes to the football game where he meets Betty.
Mm-hmm.
So Dan is also said to be smitten with Betty right away. And he even tells a friend that night that she will be his wife.
They say they really don't know that quickly.
I guess.
I feel like they do.
Sometimes.
So just remember that, ladies, 6 years into your relationship.
Right.
He knew.
If he wanted to.
Yeah.
He would.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. So Dan and Betty began dating long distance while Dan was studying to become a doctor at Cornell, and Betty was also finishing up her degree. And Dan was really in love with Betty. He was almost kind of borderline obsessed with her. That makes how sense. She described
it's coming
it.
Coming on real strong, really early on.
Yes. And he would ask her to marry him all the time. Hmm. He was like, we should get married. You should marry me, blah, blah, blah.
She probably wasn't sleeping with him.
Mm-mm. She was not. And until she finally says yes, but with the caveat that she wanted to finish getting her degree.
Good job.
Which is smart,
right? Did she do that?
She did.
Okay.
But they did eventually get married in April 12th, 1969.
69.
And this is pictures of their wedding.
Oh, yeah.
They're a very handsome couple.
It's a good looking couple.
They're a very good looking couple.
It looks like sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet, though.
Yeah, yeah.
She does look out of his, I'm not going to lie. A little bit. A bit.
And she's the same height as him. Mm-hmm. If probably not taller. You know. So, while this sounds like a very classic love story, it sounds like right away, Dan and Betty had a very different idea of what their partner's role should be in a marriage. So it sounds like with Betty's upbringing, her dad was very present in the household and with raising the kids, because her mom was one of those women who seemed to have the disposition of like a Victorian child.
Okay.
Like,
fainting spells.
Always had the vapors, you know, like she couldn't drive because it was too stressful. Like just one of those women is like always, you know. Yeah. So whereas with Dan, his dad was the breadwinner, but not around as much. And his mother was the main parent. See where the kind of the problem is?
Yes.
Starting.
I just expect it. Yeah. You've never seen anything else.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Exactly.
So just the opposite. So like her dad.
Kind of the opposite.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So her dad was like very present, very active in their lives. Okay. Would do pickup, would do grocery shopping. Mm. Maybe it was also the breadwinner, but also like kind of taking over some of the kid
like a
raising.
Good dude.
Yes, I would argue he's probably better than Dan's dad.
Mm. Okay. This can create conflict. I see that.
I feel like Dan's dad was more like a madman type.
Sure.
And I think that definitely frames how Dan works too. So right away on their honeymoon in the Caribbean, this is according to Betty, I will say, the newlyweds are renting out this private house. And it has staff there to do all the cooking and cleaning.
Okay.
Dan.
Where were they on their honeymoon?
In the Caribbean.
The Caribbean. No.
Yeah. So Dan dismisses them all.
Okay.
Because he expects Betty to do all of that herself.
Oh. But isn't already...
On the honeymoon.
On the honeymoon.
It's crazy.
If it comes in the house, is he trying to make it save some money? Or he's just like... money is already spent...
Yeah.
She can't enjoy the 2 weeks
I guess
on
not.
The honeymoon?
I guess not.
Okay, so I imagine they probably didn't live together before.
No. And they had been long distance the entire time.
Oh, dear.
So they would have these small meetings. They weren't, fucking.
Yeah.
And it was probably very idealistic happy. Yeah. And but then, you know, finally.
Reality sets in really quickly. Okay.
And it sets in very quickly because, so Betty has this image of Dan being obsessed with her.
Yes.
And in any kind of. He's always giving her the princess treatment.
He's doting on her.
Like, he's dating her. He's trying to court her, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And she says as soon as they were married, that just switched off.
Oh, I don't like that.
I don't like that either.
It's a bait and switch.
It's a real fucking bait and switch.
My God.
Which is very interesting because...
Because it feels intentional.
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden.
It seems like steps for Dan. He's like, I gotta do this, I gotta do this, and I gotta do this. Because I gotta find a wife.
I gotta get the wife.
I got the wife now. Now it's like I'm going in this mode. Maybe it's like I don't know. Like he can only fix it in one thing and really be passionate about it. But she says it switches off.
Oh, jeez, that's very jarring.
Yes. So Betty also claims that before marrying Dan, she had control of her own finances because she was modeling and doing some other kind of jobs. But once she marries Dan, all of that becomes his. She's not even allowed to drive. In some instances.
Oh.
So Dan is like, I'm the man of the household. I control the finances. I do everything. You are just supposed to be the housewife.
Okay.
But Betty has also grown up with this idea of that she also needs to do this as well. She's like, okay, this is what a housewife does, I guess, you know? So another thing happens while they're on their honeymoon. Betty comes home pregnant. With their first child.
I remember this. I was like, I'm pretty sure she gets pregnant on the honeymoon.
And it's interesting. A lot of sources didn't talk about this, but Betty is one of those women who has two uteruses, two cervixes, and two vaginas.
What the fuck?
Evidently, she goes, has some sort of exam done before, right before the wedding. And the doctor's, do you know that you have two of everything?
I'm like, I'm actually speechless.
She didn't know. I think she only had one bladder.
Okay.
But I...
Okay, so were we talking about twins?
No.
Okay.
But she could realistically have two different pregnancies at the same time.
Oh, my God.
And this has been something that has happened in real life. People got pregnant twice because they have two sets of everything.
Okay, so I was talking to somebody recently and... Oh, I know who I was talking to. I won't say it on the pod, but like... if you have twins or you're pregnant with twins early on and then one of the twins dies, and there's that kind of running joke that like they like absorb.
Right.
Sometimes it does happen a little bit like that.
Yeah, totally.
So like that maybe explains, like, is maybe one theory about how something like that happens where you end up with like double the parts.
I think double the parts,
but that
maybe
could probably happen in a million different ways. But
totally.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
I didn't know we were going there. I did not know that about this story.
I didn't know that either until I listened to, it's a podcast called Love Murder, and they said that.
I'm trying to be respectful because I'm like, but I'm actually floored. My jaw on the floor.
I think she had some sort of procedure done to kind of stitch up one.
Oh, to like, my God.
But so,
okay.
No matter what.
Is it visible? Because some of these things, I feel like you would
know. I don't have any more.
But also,
answers.
If you're like, it's the 50s and 60s in, I don't know, like, it, then maybe in
the
a Catholic.
Northeast.
Yeah, like, you might actually not that know that much about your own anatomy.
No, I don't think so. They don't do sex ed. Are you kidding?
I'm floored.
It's crazy, right?
But certainly her parents should have fucking known.
Probably not.
Oh,
because your parents don't talk about that shit because they're Catholic.
I have no words.
So also with this, the doctor told Betty that you can do contraceptives. Probably won't work for you as well because of this. Also, you will probably get pregnant very easily, but you can also lose pregnancies very easily as well.
Sure.
And that does come into play later.
Oh my
I
God.
I will say.
Okay.
But yeah, so she gets pregnant on their honeymoon. So she has her first daughter, Kim, in 1970. And Betty is also working as a teacher to support the family where Dan is still in medical school. So she's breaking in the dough. She's raising the kid. Dan's in school. In an intense program. He's in medical school.
It's just, sorry. No, you're good. I'm just like, you don't need to add children to what is already kind of stressful.
But they don't do contraceptives because they're Catholic. They don't believe in birth control.
It was a long time ago.
They don't. But I feel like a lot of Catholics don't believe in that now.
Yeah, I don't.
Unfortunately.
Know. I don't know.
Yeah, you can go online and find fucking women talking about how they don't do birth control because of the hormones and it's killing, you know.
That's true.
You know, I mean, there is some factual stuff with that, but also, you know, don't have kids if you're not ready, I guess. Financially, maybe.
Yeah, people are doing whatever back
people
then,
really are doing whatever they want, yeah. So the couple felt that this was, all of this stuff was a necessary sacrifice. Betty working really hard. She's being the teacher. She's bringing in the dough. She's raising the kids. Dan's in medical school. Because they both were like, we're going to hustle right now.
Yeah.
We're going to make money later. We are working towards a goal. We are going to be wealthy eventually. Do the hard work now. Big reward in the future. That's kind of the idea that they both have.
Sure.
So it's also during this time that Dan decides that he also wants to get a law degree.
What?
Yeah.
Now I feel like you're just taking advantage, sir.
So the idea is because he wants to become a medical malpractice lawyer.
Smart.
Because that means he is an MD.
Yes.
Also is a goddamn attorney. He is really the ultimate malpractice lawyer, I would say.
Yes, I get it. I see that.
Yeah.
I can see that.
So, but this means that Betty has to keep working while being a mom. And by this time, Dan kind of suggests this. They have another daughter named Elise. Now they have two kids. Betty's working. Dan's still in school. But he gets accepted to Harvard Law.
Okay.
Smart guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the couple moves near Harvard where Dan is accepted.
I bet it was easier then, just saying.
Probably. So Dan is accepted to law school at Harvard. They move near Harvard in kind of the Boston area. And Betty is working as a hostess, and she's also starting to sell Tupperware and Avon to keep the family afloat. Because now she really can't work a regular...
Yeah, with two kids, yeah.
Yeah. And she's also doing kind of a makeshift daycare in the neighborhood. She's watching other people's kids. She's also very isolated during this time because they basically move away from all of her family and friends and they move to Boston. And now she has two kids. Mm-hmm. She's kind of hustling and doing stuff.
Yeah, a little less connected.
Yeah, Dan is very involved with the Harvard law scene, sure. I guess. He's, you know, he's big on networking. He's big on, yeah. you know, making it's colleagues, important. Blah, blah, blah. And that's, I think it's part of it in mm-hmm. general for lawyers. So she is very isolated. So Betty gets pregnant for a third time in 1973. So that's three pregnancies in 3 years.
Wow.
But she goes into labor 7 months or she goes into labor at 7 months.
Okay.
Dan isn't there at the time. He's on a Harvard ski trip, which is very frustrating in itself because you have two kids at home and you have a pregnant wife and you're going to go fucking ski. Sir? Yeah. Sir?
I know. And yeah. it's right because it's for the networking. But
yeah. So yeah. So she goes into labor early. She doesn't have any friends or family around. She has to call the police.
Oh, my God.
To have someone come and get her.
Jesus.
And she's also, I also have two small babies yeah, as do well. I do with them? And so she goes to the hospital. Dan is eventually able to show up. But the baby dies a few days after being born early. Unfortunately, as a little boy.
Sad.
Yeah. So between 1970 and 1979... Betty is pregnant about 10 times.
Oh.
Yeah. So the couple ends up having 4 children that live to adulthood.
Jesus. So 6.
So Betty has a couple miscarriages and 2 abortions.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm kind of surprised about because they're both very staunchly Catholic.
Are they medical necessity abortions, I wonder?
It sounds like they probably were. Yeah. It's not, there really
isn't. That doesn't, it's incongruent for them.
Yeah.
That she would be like, oh, it's not a good time.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, yeah. being pregnant 10 times in 10 years, essentially. Yeah. And then they also have the baby that passes away.
Okay.
Can you imagine the hormones?
That's true. It's a lot of,
you're it's right. a fucking roller coaster.
You're right. You're right.
Your body's just wrecked.
You're right.
Like one kid.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine. So their son, Danny, is born in 1976. So he's the first boy. And Rhett is born in 1979.
I don't like that.
Rhett makes you think of Gone with the Wind.
Yeah. there's no such thing as a not hot Rhett, is all I'm saying.
Rhett That's comes from...
a hot man's name.
Rhett comes from money.
Yes.
He also knows he comes from money and has a lot of Nepo baby... privilege okay. ingrained in him. I'm not saying he's not hot. He could
come from...
Or is a hot cowboy.
Okay, that was my next one. He could be working class hot.
Yeah, he could be...
Wealthy working class.
He could be working in Yellowstone.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, on the TV show, The Ranch guy. Right. Yeah.
Carry on.
Yeah. Those are the two Rhetts in my lineup. So Betty does at some point also have her tubes tied after Rhett is born. She's like, okay. I don't want any more kids. Thank or she's God. Like, I don't want to do this again. And Dan agrees.
Of course.
Like, fine, whatever. We'll do what you want. So eventually Dan does graduate from Harvard Law and the Broderick family moves to San Diego.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. So Dan gets a job offer. They decide to move. And it seems like Dan is making okay money, but Betty is still having to provide some financial support by working the same jobs. It's kind of like a restaurant hostess, Avon, Tupperware. Because he's not, I think this is an early lawyer sure. career. I yeah, think yeah. you have to hustle for a while for to sure. make money. Yeah. yeah. So she's still fucking hustling. And Dan is also fucking hustling, to give him some credit.
All right.
I'll let you pour because I need some more too.
We're almost empty.
Oh, no.
I need to open the rest, another one.
Oh, no.
Let me grab another
one. Okay. So during this time, Betty's hustling. Dan's also fucking hustling to give him some credit. He's working insane hours, and he also goes out with colleagues after work often.
Sure.
Much like his dad did. And in Dan's mind, this is what a man and a provider of the family should be doing. And when he reaches the peak of success he thinks he needs to get to, in his mind, in Dan's mind, that's when he can be more present at home.
Okay.
This is what kind of what Dan says. He says this to multiple friends. At some point, he also says it to a couples therapist they go see eventually. Because Betty has a very different idea of how their life as a family should be. She's yeah. like, you should be here. Like, why aren't you here? You were obsessed with me. Like, why aren't you here with me? Like, why don't you want to come home? Like,
yeah, you swept me off my feet.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's just me and all these kids.
Mm-hmm. And you're just out with your fucking friends, having yeah. drinks, being madmen.
And I'm in San Diego. At least it's beautiful here.
At least it's, yes, totally. So she still kind of wants that yearning that Dan had when they began their relationship.
Yearning.
Yeah. Yearning is a strong feeling sure.
Underrated.
Yeah. But it's just this kind of conflict that they constantly have. It's like a very different idea of like how a couple should be, you know?
Yeah.
And I do think it's very incompatible, I think, really. And it's like, you guys didn't have this conversation before?
No, I guess not.
I guess not. It's interesting because I do have some friends that got married in a Catholic church. And now, I don't know, maybe they didn't do this back then, but they had to do like some pretty intense counseling before they got married. Yeah. And they had these really intense conversations about this type of stuff. And did they not do that maybe back then?
Yeah, interesting.
You know, with like
I think my little sister, when she was going to get married in church, she didn't end up marrying this guy, thankfully. Mm-hmm. But they did. And actually, that's the reason they didn't get married, is because they were doing this type of counseling.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, we have very different visions about like
exactly
roles and gender roles and things like that.
Yeah. So if you're, I don't know, in a serious relationship with somebody, guys, maybe have some intense conversations before you tie the knot. Just avoid some heartache later, you know?
Yeah.
So this is something that they thought about constantly. Dan never being present, Dan always being gone, Dan working a lot, Dan networking, and Betty's like, what the fuck, you know? So they do try to figure out how to fix this marriage, but to everyone else, things are peachy. They're now becoming more in the social elite within San Diego, and Dan at some point has branched out and created his own practice in 1978 at the urging of Betty. Betty's like, go do your own thing. You are smart enough. You can do this. You know, like, I think you should go create your own practice. And this is when the couple finally starts seeing the fruits of their labor. Dan starts bringing in a lot of money.
Good, yeah.
I'm talking like six.
This is what you did all this school for.
I'm talking six figures a month.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a... Oh, back then or modern day?
No, back then.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, but the man is a doctor and a lawyer.
Yeah. So he can charge a lot of money.
A near unfathomable amount of money for me. I'm like, what the hell is that?
I don't know what to do with that. I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
But they have a lot of kids.
They have a lot of kids.
Wait, right?
They have four kids.
Oh, not that many.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm still stuck on the nine kids somewhere along the way. I'm like,
oh, that was Dan's family.
Oh, my God. Okay. All right. So they're rolling in it.
Yeah. So they're really rolling in it, and they're becoming part of the social elite in San Diego. And this is a picture of them during that era. It's not a very good picture. It's from a newspaper.
Okay. Oh, he looks... Oh, he's grown into his own.
Yes. And Betty still...
Yes. She was always...
Yeah, she was always hot.
A model.
But he's definitely gotten better, too. So, however, the counseling doesn't really help, unfortunately. Betty still feels like that Dan is an absent father and husband, which causes Dan to become more resentful of his wife, because he's like, she's always fucking nagging me about being home, about doing this, about blah, blah, blah. You know, just she's always in my goddamn face. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I don't know how else to put it.
It's relatable, you know?
it's relatable. Sometimes. You're like, God, leave me alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, are you happy with this $100,000 I made this time?
Right. You're like, damn, girl. Like,
I didn't know you also had expectations.
Like, you want me to be a husband and present when I still feel wanted? It's a lot. It's a lot. Mm-hmm. So the kids in their interviews would say that their parents fought constantly.
Ah.
And we're always teetering with the idea of divorce.
Ah, same. That sounds so familiar.
I know.
My parents, exactly that.
Same.
Bitch, it would have been easier if you'd just done it.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
For everybody.
Yeah.
I'm sure their kids probably feel the same way. So in an interview with the LA Times, their oldest child, Kim, says, quote, once mom picked up a stereo and threw it at him. And she locked him out constantly. Mm-hmm. He'd come around to my window and whisper, Kim, let me in. So very volatile relationship. Uh-huh.
And you know what? They met young, they're probably what, 30s?
Yes.
At this point?
Yeah.
If she's only ever been with this man. Mm-hmm. It can be a little bit juvenile, sort of like those dynamics.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Like, she's acting like she's in her 20s. Like,
yeah.
Like early 20s.
Really, she hasn't
had
the life experience to grow in her own right.
Yes.
She's only been Dan's wife.
She's reacting like a teenager.
Yeah, totally. And I don't think Dan helps. I think he likes to antagonize her too.
Mm, sure.
Totally. Like, because he continues to do the shit.
It's like complicated because your reactions are very juvenile, but you're dealing with very adult
situations.
Problems and yeah. issues.
And you're doing it in front of your kids.
Yeah.
That was the big problem with this whole story, I think, is the poor kids.
Yeah.
That's what I kept thinking. So then Kim continued. She would always tell me that they were going to get a divorce. And she'd say, who are you going to live with? She would, like, Betty would ask Kim, who are you going to live with? And Kim says, I was dying for Dad to divorce her. I'd say to Dad, just take me the day you leave. Mm. Which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this family, while doing well when it comes to wealth and status, are very dysfunctional, obviously. And it's just sad when it comes to what really matters is probably the happy family unit. It just isn't there, but they're outwardly looking in. It's, they have a nice house. They have extravagant things. They have a lot of money. They should be doing so fucking well. Mm-hmm. And this only gets worse when Linda walks into the picture. So 21-year-old Linda Colcanna was working as a floor secretary. It's like a pool secretary.
She's like an assistant type.
Yeah, she's like working as a receptionist for a group, essentially. Yeah. But okay. She probably gets paid less, unfortunately, even though she's probably working more. Mm. But she catches the eye of a then 37-year-old Dan at that point.
She's 21?
She's 21. And she's working at his practice in the same building as his practice.
That's considerably older than her.
I know. 16 years.
That's a lot older.
I know. So Linda Bernadette Colcanna was born on June 26, 1961 in Salt Lake City, Utah. And she also grew up in a large Catholic family, mainly of Dutch immigrants, though.
Okay.
So after high school, she had worked as a flight attendant for Delta before doing more clerical work. And she had actually gotten fired from Delta. It's kind of a funny story. So when she was like, I think 18 or 19, her and some other Delta flight attendants, they hopped on a free flight for them to go party somewhere. And they were having a good time and they were acting disorderly on the plane.
Oh.
They were being like a little, you know, they're being 19-year-old girls on a fucking flight and they were a little drunk, having a good time.
Yeah.
And evidently Linda brought a boy into the bathroom.
Oh.
And we don't know what happens, but like the head stewardess, what they called him at the time, was like, you were acting unladylike. And she reports her and she gets fired.
I do think flight attendant did, sorry, what?
They called stewardess at the time.
Yeah, it was different then.
Because pilots were doing way worse shit. Let's be for fucking real.
They still do. I think they still do. Notoriously, they were like statistically.
Some of the worst.
In terms of fidelity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. Yeah.
Nurses too. Just to equal the equation here. They say nurses are
female nurses.
Female
nurses. Male pilots and female nurses. Is that what you're saying?
Flight attendants, nurses, pilots.
Yeah.
Firemen.
Yeah.
Top totally. Cheaters.
Just look out.
Look out, everybody. Careful.
We are starting to sound like a dating podcast. So yeah, so she gets fired from Delta. I would argue just for having a little fun as a fucking 19-year-old.
Yeah, hope she learned
from maybe that. Yeah, maybe don't do that in your place of business. Yeah, I guess because you were technically, and she was like in a uniform. I know she wasn't doing it on the job, but still
they can tell that your flight is free.
Yeah, they definitely knew that. Yeah. So yeah, she gets fired, but then she moves to doing more clerical work.
Okay.
And she moves to San Diego with a boyfriend, but that relationship hadn't worked out, and so by the time she starts working in Dan's office, she is single. And this is a picture. She looks a lot like fucking Betty.
Oh, I bet. No doubt. Yeah, she's cute.
Yeah, she's also very cute. She's blonde. She's tall. Blonde. She's, very model-esque. Her and Betty could be sisters, a lot of people say.
And this woman of 21 years old hasn't had 10 of your children, minus the ones that didn't survive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has been pregnant 10 times by you.
Exactly.
Yeah, and hasn't seen your dumb ass in your skid marks. In your underwear.
Oh no, it's so specific.
Sorry.
That will do it.
That really takes the romance out. Get a bidet. Please, my God.
No one see my skid marks.
Get a bidet. Gross. If you can't do it properly, get a bidet.
I don't want to be.
This podcast brought to you by Tushy. Tushy, can you sponsor us?
We went to so many places in this episode already. I did not anticipate going.
Sorry.
Oh, okay. All right.
So the first time Betty has Linda on her radar was on an office party with Dan and a bunch of his work colleagues
and
their wives. She's friends with all these people.
Okay.
But she hears Dan mention how beautiful Linda is.
She's got a sixth sense.
And Dan isn't known to be like that type of guy. He's not commenting on people's appearance. He's not really kind of sleazy in that sense.
Okay.
So when Betty hears that,
she's like
record scratch. Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah. Oh no.
And she asks him later about this and he brushes it off like it's nothing. He's, oh yeah, I think her name is maybe starts with an L. It's like Linda or something. He's talking about this girl. She's like, you said she was beautiful. He's like, oh, I don't know. You know, it's when the gaslighting starts.
Yeah. Unfortunately. And just like how comfortable, he said it in earshot of her.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's sad. That's painful.
It's very sad. Yeah. Like, I can't imagine. And this is what Betty looked like at that time.
Yeah. Classy dame.
Still a classy. Mm-hmm. She looks like probably someone's mother. She looks like
she's in her late 30s.
Yeah. Yeah. She's probably been styled in a certain way. Yes. For sure. Yeah. But she's not 21.
Mm. That's right.
You know. So by the early 1980s, Betty and Dan are on the rocks, fighting constantly. And then Dan hires Linda as his full-time assistant.
Yes. Okay. I knew that.
She went from being like a pool secretary receptionist to Dan's specific assistant. So they're working closely together.
Got it. Oh, God. You know, Betty was like, this is bad.
Oh, she's pissed. Betty is pissed.
As you would be.
So when Betty hears about this, she gives Dan an ultimatum that he has to fire the whore by October 1st.
Okay.
October 1st comes and goes, and Dan doesn't fire Linda, and he tells Betty that she doesn't get to make decisions about his business. He's like, this is my business. I make the decisions. You have no say in here.
Yes, that you helped build with me.
That you supported me in doing. It's mine, right? So Betty then tells Dan that he can get out of their home. And he tells her, you can get out of my home. My name's on the deed. Yours isn't.
Why not?
Fuck. Bad move, Betty.
At least she's in California. I hope that
we'll get into the legal stuff. Yeah.
Hopefully it was.
So Betty at this point is convinced that Dan and Linda are having an affair. I think all of us are probably in the same boat.
I think you might as well assume the worst and just prepare yourself for the worst.
Yeah. So Dan denies and gaslights Betty over and over, telling her that Linda just works for him. But Dan is not home more and more frequently. Mm. He's staying out later. He's coming back a little bit more buzzed than he usually does. It's the writing's on the goddamn wall.
Yep.
Cue the wine pour.
I need a drink.
Totally. I need a drink after this too. So we don't really know when Linda and Dan's affair started. We know it's sometime in the early 80s, but it's never been like, this is when it happened. You know? Okay. Yeah. Because there are some people who were on Dan's side of the fence. They're like, Dan never did anything with Linda until after.
Okay.
Calling bullshit. I just, bullshit central right there.
I disagree.
Get on that train to the bullshit city.
Yeah.
My God. So Betty convinced Dan and Linda are having an affair. And she kind of does something also that's very childish as a way of acting out to try to get Dan's attention. She starts taking their credit cards and just buying extravagant shit.
Oh.
She's charging, working 9 to 5.
Interesting.
Remember that Blue Contrail song?
Yes.
Hit 'em up style.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. She's doing that. She takes
all her friends.
Yep. Yep. She's saying, hey, ladies, if a man want to get back wild.
Sorry. Yep.
So Dan sees all these charges and things are just, they're just getting more toxic and visceral, and they're just fighting more viscerally and more just really, really badly in front of their kids, which is not good. So Betty then tries to get plastic surgery, and she starts working out, and she just tries to become the best version of herself.
Okay, good for her.
For Dan to try to regain his affection. I wish she was doing it for herself.
It's just too late.
Unfortunately.
Once he's, you know, in another place mentally, that's not coming back around.
No, just, unfortunately, yeah.
But it's sad.
I know. Painful. So Betty, at the advice of a friend, tries to do something romantic for Dan. She's like, you need to stop getting on his case. Maybe just try to woo him again.
Okay, try to be a joy to be around and not a naggy bitch all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. And so for his 39th birthday in 1983, Betty gets dressed up, buys 2 dozen red roses and a bottle of Dom Perignon, and like a gag gift. And she's going to bring it to Dan's office on his birthday. Because I think she also kind of wants to make her presence known. Be like, I am the wife sure. to Linda, probably. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but he gets to the office around 11 a.m. And Dan's not there.
Oh, yes, I remember this. Okay.
So Betty asks the office manager that she does not recognize, because there was a previous office manager that Betty was calling constantly and asking, can you just tell me, are Dan and Linda screwing each other?
Okay, yes. So they, like, they do this in the show, don't they?
I don't
like,
know. I don't remember.
You didn't, okay.
I watched it. It's been years, though. Yeah,
true.
Yeah, she's like, can you just tell me if they're fucking, essentially? And the office manager talks to Dan about it. She's like, hey, you need to figure out your shit.
Yeah, I shouldn't be in the middle of this?
Yeah. And she's like, it was kind of an open secret. Everyone yes. knew that Dan was fucking Linda, yeah. but that office manager gets fired.
Fair. Yeah.
She of course. Probably could have filed a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe today, but maybe not back then. But, yeah. you know. So there's a new office manager, and she doesn't know who Betty is. And she's like, oh, she's like, you have an appointment with Mr. Broderick? And Betty's like, oh, I'm his wife. And she's like, where's Dan? And the office manager is like, oh, I don't know. He went to lunch. And she's like, okay. She's like, well, where's Miss Colkenna? Where's his assistant? She's like, oh, she went to lunch too. You know, awkward position for this poor fucking woman.
Yes.
And she informs them that they've both been gone since lunch.
Okay.
Like, maybe try to be like a girl's girl mm-hmm. a little bit. Yeah, they're both been gone for a while, mm-hmm. you know. So Betty's like, okay, I'm going to go sit in his office and wait. For Dan to come home.
Okay.
Or come back.
Okay.
She also sees that Linda's office is right next to his, adjoining. It's very extravagantly put together. Mm. Also on Linda's desk is a picture of Dan. What? Like a younger picture of Dan.
Oh, that's so offensive.
I know.
Are you serious?
So they were just like openly... In the office
and
is
the
fucking
wild. And the audacity
wild.
To have my... Dan, my version of this man.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I would be so livid.
And so
I'm sorry. He walks in that door, I'm flying across the desk. I'm like
this. I'm like the Kung Pao karate kick.
It would be.
Ooh. Or the Mortal Kombat where he's just like with the little like
yes.
the paddly legs.
Also Mrs.
Yeah.
Office.
Girl
is gonna just be trashed to all hell. I'm taking a shit in it.
Somewhere where you're not gonna find it for a hot minute.
You know that episode of The Office where someone poops him? I've been doing that.
Yeah. Totally.
Wherever there's carpet.
Yep. It's going down. So she sits there. She waits for Dan to come back. He never returns to the office. She sits there for like hours.
That's so embarrassing. I hate it. Oh,
I know.
It's important to mention just how like the humiliation. It's so visceral.
Uh-huh.
And that is all part of the reason
story.
That this goes
the way it does. It does. Yes. Yeah. Also in Dan's office, there's streamers. There's a cake. There's party hats. They very obviously have a birthday party
yeah.
in his office. And probably Linda threw it.
Yes.
Unfortunately. So Betty goes home, fucking pissed, as probably we all would be, and she grabs all of Dan's very expensive custom made suits,
ooh, and he needs those if he's
throws them in the backyard and lights them all on fire.
Oh, she is the, what is it, the roadmap for the original
Way to Exhale? Where she burns the car?
Yes, it's like, it's the OG.
Yeah.
Scorned woman.
Uh-huh. And the firefighter's like, bam, that's, you can only burn trash. She's like, that is trash.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that Angela Bassett?
Yes.
I think that's Angela Bassett. Go pop off, queen. She then doubles down, pours paint all over the remnants of the suits, so there's nothing that can be mm-hmm. recovered. She's pretty fucking pissed. She's also doing this in front of the kids, which is not good.
No, it's really immature.
It's really mature. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it said that Dan came home well into the evening, a little drunk, and didn't really get mad at Linda. He was like a little more stoic and told her, he's like, hey, Bets, we just had a small party. I had depositions the rest of the afternoon. I was in court, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I don't know where Linda went. He wasn't pissed, though. He was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? He was just like, hey, I went to have some drinks with colleagues after. And he's like, what is this, you know? It's also weird that you wouldn't come home and hang out with your fucking kids on your birthday, you know?
But like, not for Dan, right?
Not for Dan. unfortunately. Yeah. So Betty decides to believe Dan.
Oh, God.
Unfortunately.
There's so much about this that is like mildly triggering.
I think for most women, this is mildly triggering. If you've ever been cheated on, I was in a very similar situation, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
So it's...
Yeah, the choosing to be like... Okay. Yeah, because it's less painful.
It's less painful. Yeah. And it's also, you're not going to have to...
Deal with it,
uproot your entire life.
Yes.
Change.
Yes.
You know...
Be uncomfortable. Especially for her, it's like... It's clearly there's a situation where she's worked for this life that they live now, mm-hmm. too, but he's sort of got this like...
He has the purse strings.
He does. Unfortunately. And I don't know how if that's realistic or if it's just perceived. Maybe at the time it was different and she really was at the mercy. I don't know. But I guess we didn't have credit cards until the 70s. So maybe it all was all in his fucking name.
It probably was all. I mean, so it seemed like early on he wanted everything to be in his fucking true. Name because he's like...
Just easier at like this point, just to be like, okay,
yeah,
fine. I don't want it to be true, right?
Right. Yeah, I'd be like, okay, I guess I overreacted.
But
like,
I want to know why, if it is true, why? What are you lying about? What are you saving for the man? Where you're not in love with her anymore? You are clearly into somebody else. Mm. What are you getting out of this? I don't know, because I guess your life doesn't change either. You still got someone there to take care of all your shit?
Deeply Catholic, though, too.
Okay.
I think because you don't get divorced in traditional Catholicism. I guess so. You know, that's not an option.
Yeah.
And he seemed very deeply Catholic. He didn't want her to use contraceptive.
It's just, okay, and it's just really frustrating when it's so hypocritical, though.
It is very hypocritical.
You're only religious, deeply religious, and principles about your religious beliefs.
But you can have an affair.
Yeah. When it applies to controlling the woman in your life or mm-hmm. your children mm-hmm. or.
Absolutely.
This is why Jesus can rest in peace. I don't give a fuck about it. Get out of here.
Jesus probably isn't resting in peace. He's probably pissed. You motherfuckers.
Jesus probably is resting in peace.
I swear to God, if you take my name in vain one more goddamn time, I'm going to kick somebody in the
face. What am I in this for?
You're like, why are you putting me in this? Like, I didn't say that. The fuck, guys?
I actually said a bunch of really cool fucking stuff. I guess you guys didn't listen.
I literally said, don't be a dick to people.
Yes.
Yes. What are we doing? So, on Betty's 36th birthday, Dan misses her party. And he doesn't give her a reason. And Betty tries to...
She's only 36.
Uh-huh.
God damn it.
This is kind of the same era. I don't know if it's specifically this year, but she tries to die by suicide. But she's unsuccessful.
Oh, God.
Once again, it feels very childish in a way they're like an attention grab. I don't know if she
potentially.
It's like, I don't want to say like she was just doing it for attention, but... She's doing a lot of shit for attention.
It's possible.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So like get back at him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a time after this that Dan kind of starts showing up the way that Betty has always wanted him to. He starts to buy her like expensive gifts and they go on nice vacations. They like go to Europe for 2 weeks and they go to New York and they stay at a 5-star hotel and see a show and have a nice dinner. And Betty even starts to talk to a doctor about reversing her tube ligation.
Why? What?
So her and Dan can have another kid.
Why?
Because she thinks everything's great. It's the classic, we're going to have another baby to save the marriage scenario.
I bet you anything his girlfriend and him were on the rocks at this time.
We'll get into it.
He's probably like...
We get into what's happening. Okay. Actually, on the other side of that. Because there's another person in this scenario right here. But the doctor's like, hey, like you actually can't reverse that, but you can do IVF. But Dan doesn't believe in IVF.
Okay.
Because once again.
Good girl. Do not have another child with this man.
Deeply this fucking Catholic.
Bad.
Yeah. So this era doesn't last long, unfortunately. So all this is happening on Dan Betty's side. Linda's also in a relationship now.
Okay. So they broke up.
Yeah. And in later interviews, the guy that she was dating, I couldn't find his name.
Probably because he wouldn't fucking leave his wife for her.
Yeah, so actually, I'm going to tell you right now. Oh. So in later interviews, he talks about how frequently and often Linda talks about Dan. Mm. She's like, this man's amazing. She's like, praises Dan. Mm. He's like just fucking top of the fucking charts type of guy. And it's a point of contention with Linda and her boyfriend.
Okay.
Because he's like,
Why are you so obsessed with this
guy? Why are you so obsessed with this married father of four?
Your boss.
Your boss.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that they fight about frequently. And then he goes to say later that Linda admits at some point that her and Dan had had a romantic relationship. But they ended it because they knew it was wrong.
Oh, okay.
Because they're both deeply fucking Catholic. And our guilt is very, very deep.
That's true.
And Linda, I didn't talk about this earlier, but like her mom died when she was really young. She was like 10 or 11 when her mom died. And so like she was very close with her dad. And she was like, what would my father think of me? Yeah. So there's just like a lot of deep guilt and shame kind of associated with, I mean,
yeah,
probably should be a little bit, right? Let's be real.
Yeah, it's human.
Yeah. So they ended the relationship because they knew it was wrong.
Okay.
And this seems like the same time that Dan is trying to fix things with Betty.
Got it.
So like they kind of like are like, okay, this is wrong. We got to stop this romantic thing. But she didn't stop working for Dan.
Yeah, and she has feelings for him, obviously.
Yeah, and they have feelings for each other.
Yeah.
So it's like, what did you think?
I don't know.
I guess maybe. I guess some in some scenarios, maybe, you know, things pass.
No. No.
I don't know.
She should have quit.
She should have quit, or he should have been like, I'm going to refer you to somebody else or something, you know? And so that's, it kind of seems like the same time that Dan's trying to fix things with Betty. But at the same time, though, Dan is still very active in Linda's life. He is sending her flowers and doing all this kind of behind the scenes stuff. And the boyfriend's like, what the fuck?
It's like breadcrumbing. Like, I don't want.
He's breadcrumbing. Absolutely.
I don't want you to go too far.
And then Christmas of 1984 happens, which is a big catalyst. So at this point, Dan and Betty are in a very lavish rental property in La Jolla because there was some issues with their coral reef home. It sounds like there was maybe some foundation problems. So it was getting renovated. So they were staying in a really nice rental property. It's like a 7-bedroom mansion in La Jolla. And leading up to this Christmas of 1984, Dan and Betty had been looking for a new home to purchase as well, but Dan keeps finding a reason not to buy a new house with Betty. It's like, as much as he's trying, he probably just knows deeply that maybe this is over.
Okay.
And Betty's during this time, she's like, guys, being so annoying. There's always a problem with the house we keep looking at. We've been looking at so many houses. There's always an issue. There's always a problem.
Okay. And maybe he was talking to Linda again.
Mm-hmm. So they're at this rental property for Christmas in 1984, and Betty is expecting a very big, lavish gift as an apology from Dan for stepping out. Because she had a friend who had a lawyer husband who had had an affair, and they reconciled, they figured it out, and he bought her a huge fucking ring.
Got it.
And so Betty was kind of expecting the same thing, and she probably dropped some hints. She doesn't seem like a person who's not going to.
Sure.
You yes. know?
Yes. Not subtle.
She's not subtle. And it's like, it's never been talked about Dan having an affair, but it's kind of implied at this point. Dan has never admitted.
Oh, yeah.
But like, of course.
That's what will make you crazy.
Uh-huh.
I know. That's the stuff.
So Betty's expecting some sort of big ass ring from Dan, essentially, an apology ring.
Okay. So these are her unrealistic expectations.
Yeah. And she maybe had since given them some magazines or something to look at, tried to drop some hints, but she does get a ring from Dan. But according to Betty, it was a shitty, tiny POS ring.
Oh, bam. Okay. And it probably was.
And this causes Betty to lose her shit on Dan on Christmas morning.
Oh, see? And we are unbalanced.
Yes. In front of the kids. It's cause, and they have this huge fucking fight.
My parents had one really gnarly fight on Christmas I'll never forget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something your kids are never going to forget.
Exactly.
Yeah. And according to Dan, this is the end of the marriage for him.
Because she can't keep her shit together for like 10 minutes at Christmas.
For Christmas. I always think of Love Actually, when Emma Thompson gets the CD and not the necklace that she found.
You know, I know the movie, but I have not seen.
Oh.
I don't think I've seen it.
It's.
But you're describing, you're conjuring an image that
So it's like a, kind of like an anthology, I guess. There's a bunch of different stories happening at the same time. Uh-huh. They're not all connected, but Emma Thompson and Ellen Cummings are a married couple.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Not Ellen Cummings.
Oh, okay. I was like, Ellen Cummings.
Ellen Richter.
Oh, okay.
Rest in peace.
Okay.
No, not Ellen Richter. Oh my God, the guy who played Snape.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Harry Potter.
Oh, okay.
God damn it. I'm going to have to look it up.
That guy might be gay too.
I don't think he's gay.
Okay. But
he's also dead.
Alan Cummings
is. R.A.P. Alan Cummings is very gay.
Like, I'm sorry. When they cast him as someone's husband?
Again. I'm going to look up. Snape actor.
He's got that super
British Alan Rickman.
God. Rickman.
Alan Rickman. Alan. So they're a couple in the movie. He kind of starts having a flirtatious relationship, maybe affair with his secretary or someone who works
very cliche.
Very cliche. Probably because of the story.
Maybe.
And Emma Thompson kind of knows, but she doesn't really do anything about it. And then she finds a necklace before Christmas.
And she thinks it's hers?
And she thinks it's hers.
Oh, my God.
And then she opens her Christmas present from him. And it's a Joni Mitchell CD.
Oh.
It's a gut-wrenching scene. Because then she goes upstairs.
And she gets it. She realizes.
Yeah, she goes upstairs. She plays the CD. And she just starts sobbing by herself in the room. It's like, she keeps her shit together for the kids. Essentially.
Right.
She goes upstairs and cries by herself. Betty does not do that.
Right. Betty
goes off on Dan.
Betty might be a bit unbalanced. Like, she probably needs some medication.
We're going to talk more about that.
Yeah. Because the kids aren't like, please get me away from this crazy lady for no reason, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. They're like, this is not good.
Yeah.
I mean, the kids are a little split too as well.
I can assume that he's not, I don't know. I guess I'm just assuming he's not the most pleasant guy to be around, but he might be. He might be fine. I have no idea.
I think Dan is fine. I just think he's just kind of an absent father. We'll get into that later. So all of this is going on with the Broadricks. Fucking Christmas time. Betty and Dan are fighting. Dan's like, I'm
done. This is
yeah. So strong. Dan like leaves during Christmas. He like goes to Palm Springs.
Oh, because you care about your children also or not?
They both suck.
They do.
Kind of in this story. Yeah. Unfortunately. Linda, also around Christmas time, she gets a call from Dan and she's with her boyfriend. They're supposed to be spending the holidays together. She gets a call from her boyfriend and she's like, I have to leave and help Dan. And her boyfriend's like, what the fuck? It's Christmas. There's no reason why you have to leave to help Dan. Because we're supposed to be together. Like, this is supposed to be our Christmas together. And he gives her an ultimatum. He's like, either you cut off your ties with your boss. Maybe not your boss, but clearly you're in love with your boss. You need to figure this out. He's like, I want to be with you. I want a future with you.
Let's have some boundaries.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Talked about a future together. But you are so hung up on your married father.
I know, but she was so young when
she was very young. Yeah. She was like 23 at the time. But you're just so hung up on this man. He's like, what the fuck are we doing? Yeah. You need to make a decision here.
That's too bad. This poor guy.
He gives her an ultimatum and Linda chooses Dan.
Of course. She's in love with him.
I know. And that is where we will leave you this week.
Like the most shit is about to hit the fan.
It's gonna get real fucking ugly.
It does. Yeah.
Yeah, it gets real bad. So we're gonna talk about that next week.
Okay.
But yeah. Brady Broderick, part one. She's a crazy.
A wild bitch.
I feel
but
bad.
It's understandable to some degree.
I know. It's
not, of course, but
I know. It's why the story I think is still so relevant because we see all sides and we're like, God.
And it is.
Damn, like he really gaslit her and made her feel fucking crazy when she truly wasn't fucking crazy, but then he drove her crazy.
Right. There are layers to it.
There's a lot of layers. Yeah. The layers are going to get way more complicated.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah. Because right now you're like, this guy's just being like a kind of a pussy and it'll be a bit of a piece of shit.
Yeah.
He just can't end this marriage, even though he clearly should. And they probably maybe never should have been married, I would argue.
Yeah.
But you know who's the blame here? Catholicism.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Not Jesus.
No.
Without blame Jesus.
No, he's a cool dude.
No, Jesus is a cool guy.
Yes. I think we can all agree that.
Yeah.
That he was a cool dude.
Yeah.
But
he's the best guy around.
I don't know. I'll show you.
The vocals, Tim. Okay, thanks for listening. Thank you, guys. We will finish the story next week. I originally was going to do this as a one-parter, but I feel like it's just going to be very long, especially after this. It just gets way more complicated, and I just feel like two is going to be easier.
Love it.
So,
yeah, that was a full.
This will not be a fucking Heaven's Gate, okay? And we're not doing three. Never again.
Yeah. The thing about Heaven's Gate is, I feel like I'm going to say this, and I don't mean to offend you. They were not interesting enough to justify. I mean, talked about so many episodes.
Like, that's the way
basically
it needed
you
to
hated
go.
It.
No.
Basically, you hated
no,
it.
No, that's not what I mean. I just mean it.
They were so fucking lame.
They were nerds.
And that's what's disappointing, because there was no
real
jazz. So crazy shit happening.
No, it was just like, it was like a slow drip.
And that's a cult.
That is some type of cult.
Yeah, like, they are.
They're not all jazzy.
No. They were the cult of cults.
Yes.
Which is why we did it for 100, but I will never do that again.
Obviously, I'm not going to do 100 Wins Gate again. But yeah, so we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah.
We will wrap up this story. And until next time,
stay grimly curious.
Look, I did it.
Thank you so much for listening. Music by Alex Kingston and Adam McKinnon.
For podcast photos and updates, follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Grimly Podcast.
Be sure to rate and review, and we will see you next week for another episode. Bye, bitch.
8 is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.